This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com.
Now the 2-2. Well hit.
Years ago tonight, man, I know we all used to be younger, but geez, the music was Major League Baseball's CBS theme back when CBS was in the MLB game. The call there, that of Sean McDonough, who was the lead voice of Major League Baseball on CBS at that time, working with Tim McCarver as Joe Carter, touched them all, as one of the other calls described it. So it is not a coincidence that we welcome to the program Sean McDonough, one of the most esteemed of all our Orange alums as well. Sean, I much appreciate the time. How vividly do you recall a quarter century ago tonight?
Well, just makes me feel old, Charlie. I can't believe it was 25 years ago. It was a great moment. You know, when you get into our business and you do play-by-play, you really hope that you're fortunate enough maybe once or twice in your career to be there for something like that. So, yeah, I think it was shocking to us at the time. I mean, when he came up to the plate, Joe Carter, you're just kind of anticipating all of the possibilities. But to go from trailing the game to winning the game with one swing, and not only having the World Series end and the season be over, but that was the end of our run at CBS, too. We already knew that CBS had lost the national contract, and we wouldn't be doing the World Series and the playoffs going forward. So, you know, from that standpoint, it was kind of a bittersweet moment, too. But great moment. You know, it's not very often that the World Series ends on a home run. That was just the second time. Bill Mazeroski was the other. And, to be there, it was really a treat.
As a result, I suppose calling it would build in some logical inherent bias. I have to rate Mazeroski number one because it was game seven, right? A tie game. But I'm going in order. Mazeroski, Carter, Gibson, Bobby Thompson, Fisk as the five wow moments, home run moments in the history of Major League Baseball. Tear apart or concur to your heart's
desire?
Well,
obviously you put thought into it and I haven't, but that sounds like a reasonable list. I agree with you. You know, the Mazeroski homer, you know, that was a big upset in that series. The Pirates weren't supposed to beat them. This I don't think was a big surprise. As a matter of fact, the Blue Jays had won the World Series the year before as well, so that's why they were still the world champions. And, yeah, it was Game 6. If it had happened in Game 7, then I think you could make the argument to put it next to or even ahead of Mazeroski. But I think you have it in the right order. I'll always be partial to the Fisk home run.
Sure.
I was 13 years old sitting in the center field bleachers at Fenway Park. And watch that. You know, to me, the home run that Bernie Carbo hit earlier in the game gets forgotten, but, you know, that was probably more important because, you know, if he didn't hit it, then Carlton Fisk never gets a chance to win the game. So that was exciting as a 13-year-old, and now as a 56-year-old, I'm excited about going to game one here in beautiful downtown Boston tonight. I'm sorry to rub that into the Houstonians, and I'm not trying to do that. You know, I'm tremendous respect for the Astros and what they have accomplished, and I know how hard it is when the team you love loses like that. And I honestly thought that Houston had the most talented all-around team in baseball again this year, but unfortunately, in a limited number of game series, maybe the best overall team doesn't always win. And the Red Sox have had just a magical year where every single thing that can go their way goes their way. So I would be surprised if they didn't win the whole thing the way this season has gone for them.
Talk with Sean McDonough, and so many of the lead-up-to moments kind of get washed away when there's the finality, certainly something as memorable as the Carter homer. But that series, the two preceding games, Sean, 15-14 game four, in which Mitch Williams played a prominent role, and then a 2-0 epic pitcher's duel in game five.
Yeah, that was a great series, and it had a little bit of everything. And obviously, you know, the Phillies were a really colorful team. You know, that was back in the John Kruk, Lenny Dykstra, Dave Holland, as you mentioned, Mitch Williams, Curt Schilling, you know, Darren Dalton. It was a team full of characters. And I think for that reason, a lot of the people who didn't really have a rooting interest around the country, you know, kind of found themselves cheering for the Phillies. But there were some tremendous games. You know, that 15-run game that you mentioned was absolutely wild. And I thought it was a terrific series. You know, as you said, if it ended in the seventh game, I think it would have been regarded as one of the great World Series of all time. Maybe you have a list of that too, Charlie, that you've put time and effort into.
Not yet, but it's a
homework
assignment.
It was a pretty exciting World Series for sure.
Hey, I want to ask you, as we talk with Sean McDonough, you know, I've known you a little bit over the years, but not closely, as you got out of Syracuse as I was going in. Of course, our Orange Mafia spreads far and wide, and we're all interconnected. But I have no idea if you have been or still are much of a boxing guy. Because one thing that I loved about your call, right, the late, great Tom Cheeks call with a touch of all Joe, but your call, I thought, framed it as kind of a heavyweight champion of baseball retaining his belt.
Yeah, and that's what it felt like to me, because that series, as you just described it, you know, was really back and forth and some wild swings within the games and momentum shifts, you know, within the series. You know, that night, for a lot of that night, it looked like the Phillies were going to win the game and force a game seven, and you know, they just kind of went back and forth at each other, almost like you would be exchanging punches. So, you know, I try not to memorize what you're going to say when something happens. And at the end of the game, and, you know, there was no way you could have anticipated that Joe Carter would hit a three-run homer to win the World Series. So, you know, that's just kind of what came into my head. You know, it was felt like a kind of a heavyweight fight. And that's in the end, the Blue Jays did retain their title. And it was awesome. You know, and the late, great Tom Cheek, as you've referenced a couple times on the Blue Jay Radio, had a great call, too, and I'm sure that will live for a very long time.
Yeah, and then Vince Scully was just obviously weighing over his head on the radio network call, huh?
I haven't heard that one, but if I had, I'm sure he was probably better than both Tom and me, because Vince Scully is the greatest baseball broadcaster of all time, in the opinion of most, and I'm certainly not going to argue with that.
I just thought it'd be cool to mark the anniversary with getting the guy who called it on TV, where more people, of course, see it and hear it than anywhere else. Let me ask you a couple of other things, Sean, before I let you go. ESPN, college football, college basketball. I know you've done multiple, I believe multiple, Texas-Oklahoma games. Where do you rate that as a broadcasting experience, the uniqueness of the setting?
Oh, awesome. You know, just awesome. Love doing it. You know, love, you kind of have to. It's one of the few places where we go where you can't really just drive right up to the stadium. You know, invariably you get dropped off at the entrance to the gates there and kind of weave our way through the crowd and the tailgaters and the state fair exhibits and the various food forms. And, you know, it's an awesome experience. I love doing it. I've done it, I think at least three or four times, and hope I have the opportunity to do it again someday. You know, it doesn't really matter what the records are, and, of course, usually they're both at least decent. You know, it's always going to be one of those rivalry games that is big, regardless of how the teams are doing at that particular time.
Well, I know you've had Clemson at least once this season. We'll spare the details there. Do you, other than that, hey, in one game, you never know, any plausible hope that someone can at least challenge Alabama?
Yeah, Clemson can. You know, I don't think they had their best day against Syracuse, which I know is the game that you're referencing. We just had Clemson again this past Saturday down there, beating previously undefeated NC State. You know, their talent level is similar to Alabama. You know, everywhere you look, they have 4- and 5-star recruits, and they have a lot of them. It's not just the first-string guys. It's the second-team guys who are rotating in or waiting for a chance to play when they are, you know, juniors or seniors or even sophomores. So I think Clemson is really, really talented. We have seen Alabama in person once. You know, we haven't had them at Ole Miss. I haven't seen them obviously be challenged by anybody, but, you know, and I think they will have a very tough game coming up when they get to LSU. That's a talented team. I'm a barely talented team on defense, especially. I'm just not sure if LSU has enough offense to win that game. But Clemson does. I mean, I think if it was an Alabama-Clemson final, and if I had to predict right now, that's what I would predict. You know, I think those two teams are very similar from a talent standpoint.
Hey, with, I'm sure, zero regrets over opting to do Monday Night Football for a couple of years, but I know a lot of people think it's cool, college fans, that, you know what, you decided college football is more fun, and it's the place that you get back to doing. Having said that, what do you make of John Gruden's lucrative mess he's gotten himself into with the Raiders?
Well, I'm surprised because, you know, I thought of the new coaches. He was stepping into, you know, one of the best situations. That was a team that was, you know, as you know, a year removed from playing in the playoffs, because John and I did the Raider playoff game there in Houston when the Texans beat them. You know, and, you know, they had one of the best offensive lines in football. They had a quarterback in Carr who I know John really likes his talent and his character. And, you know, I felt like, you know, the season they had last year that got Jack Del Rio fired might have been an aberration, not a sign that 2 years ago was an aberration. But, you know, for a variety of reasons, it's been a rough year. I thought at the time and still think trading Khalil Mack was a big mistake. But, you know, maybe they're pointing more toward the future when they get to Las Vegas. I don't know that for sure. I don't bother John much during the season. We text from time to time, but I haven't had any lengthy conversations with him about it. But when you have a 10-year contract, I guess you can take the long view. And it seems like, again, with the trade yesterday and accumulating another first-round pick from the Cowboys for Amari Cooper, that, you know, that's really what they're doing. They're looking toward the future.
One last thing, more as much personal curiosity as anything else, Sean. You've done network-level games for years and years and years, the better part of a couple of decades doing Red Sox games. I know you again this year will be doing the national championship game on radio after doing one of the semifinals on ESPN ABC. In terms of radio roots and in terms of the pure play-by-play skill being more a radio thing, is that an extra kick doing that?
Oh, I love doing it. You know, and I was fortunate that they allowed me to keep doing it the last couple of years, even when I was off doing the NFL games on Monday Night Football. You know, radio is a ton of fun. It's the only radio game that I do within the year. So, you know, I really do have to sort of practice before I go to do it. You know, I will spend some time just watching games on TV and trying to call it in a radio style to get in the habit of being much more descriptive. You know, I think both of them, I think, there are cliches about which is more difficult, or radio broadcasting is really real broadcasting because you're painting all the pictures, and TV, you're just putting captions on pictures. But, you know, I think that's way too simplistic. TV is difficult in its own way. You know, on radio, you control everything that you say, the order in which you say it. You don't have producers and directors in your ear telling you what to do. You know, on TV, a lot of times you're responding to things that are flying up on the screen and having to put the right words with them very quickly. You have people talking in your ear. You have graphics and flashbacks flying in and sideline reporters that maybe you know what they're talking about or not. So, you know, I think they're both challenging in their own way, and they're both fun. But I really look forward to doing that national championship game on radio every year. It's a blast.
A game, by the way, you'll be able to hear on ESPN 97.5. Sean McDonough, ESPN ABC, looking forward to college hoops as well. Hey, I really appreciate the time. As I said, just thought it would be fun to mark the 25-year anniversary of your call, and more important than the call, Joe Carter's moment.
I enjoyed it. It was a nice trip down memory lane, brought back a lot of great memories, and always great to speak with you. Go Orange!
Thanks again, Sean. I'll not abuse the privilege, but bug you going forward now that I'm on the ESPN station
Anytime.
Here in
Look
town.
Forward to it.
We need to get to our last break.